morning, and I'm going to just go to bed, so I'm about 7:30, and we'll just take day by day.
10 days. We'll take take every day by day. There's no real reason to plan for things that may or may not ever happen. So, you know, this is a rapidly changing situation. No one can predict the future in general, and especially for these unusual times. So thanks for participating. Once again, I just want to throw out, if anyone has any questions or comments they want to make on this subject, feel free.
Thank you so much for the commentary and your participation tonight.
Thank you very much. You know, it's my honor and a privilege. When I first got my license 9 years ago, one of the first things that I did was discover this technical net and listen to it every Sunday night. And I can't begin to tell you what an honor it is to be part of it these days.
God bless you.
Roy M2EO, could I say something on a totally different subject if I can?
Okay, Rich, but again, you got to understand, it can't be personal, it can't be your backstory, and it can't be those topics that everyone gets upset with. But other than that, ask away.
No, it's nothing like that. I would never talk about that. I've been around radio since 1965. I just purchased something at a good price, and I wanted to pass along what happened. I bought an ICOM IC7300. It's 166. It's got not too many buttons. It's got a touch screen. Everything is buttons, and most of it is touch screen. The price was unbeatable. It normally sells less for $12.50. Ham Radio Outlet has a sale. They're selling it for $997. And it comes, you have to download, once you purchase, a rebate coupon for $100. Ham Radio Outlet, I had trouble downloading it. I called up. They told me how to download it. I filled it out and sent it in. So, the radio basically cost me $100 less. $997 minus $100. It's a great radio. It's a base station size radio, but small. Very, very intuitive and easy to use. That's all I have to say, boy. I've been around radio for years. And to real.
AC suggest. Well, Rich, I wish you luck with the IC7300. It's a very good design. It has a very good price point. It's a software-defined radio, which is my favorite type of radio. The radio I'm using right now is a Flex 6700. It's a software-defined radio. It's actually less expensive now at HRO. They're now selling it for $879.95 with the rebate. So it's actually gone down. And it's even a better bargain if people are so inclined to software-defined radios and ICOM radios. But it's a very popular radio. I get the sense that about once every 10 years, everyone kind of buys the same radio. When I was first getting into this hobby 9 years ago, it was the TS-2000. 10 years earlier, it was the 706 from ICOM. And it seems like the magic radio for this particular decade is going to be the ICOM 7300. So I hope you enjoy your radio.
Yes, I'm very much enjoying it. I just wanted to pass that along. If somebody needs a new radio, it's a bargain. I'm just going to listen out. End to wheel.
I don't know. I'm just watching what's going on in the repeater. There's someone having fun someplace, but I wish, you know, they weren't having quite so much fun. You know, take it someplace else. Do something else. And you know, be well, but be well someplace else. So let's hear a little silence from the repeater for a second, and then I'll go on. Okay, very good. The sound is silent. Once again, before I ask for any other people if they have any questions, I have yet to kind of get into the complete rhythm of this new position that I'm temporarily in. I want to remind everyone that if they have a topic, if they would like to ask a technical question but won't be able to transmit onto the repeater, or if they have a question for Paul about the space report or a website or a story, or if they have a question for me that they'd like me to discuss a topic or an article that they read, or if they have any puzzlers, you remember the puzzlers in the good old days. The way to get me is through email, is type in mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And that email will get flagged by me, and you'll find I respond very quickly to emails. I'm not one of those guys that takes about a week or two to get back to people. I've been known to answer email replies within 5-10 minutes in some cases. Anyway, articles will be available on my website link page. That's roy.ac2gs.com. Again, roy.ac2gs.com. And it'll have a link to articles that I talk about. This particular week, I have an interesting YouTube from a guy who's a PhD, I think, in physics, and does all kinds of interesting experiments, but he also does a lot of YouTube stuff. And he started off with the intellectual premise of what would happen if a complete sociopath had control of dealing with the virus and decided, rather than to hit the brakes either quick or slow or multiple times, if you just gun the engine and step on the accelerator and try and jump from one cliff to another. And he has some interesting theories of what that might cause and how bad it might look. So I thought it might interest some people. So that's available at roy.ac2gs.com, my link page. We maintain a chat room, which wasn't terribly active tonight, I can understand. You can type just in your browser, chat.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you to the chat room. In the old days, I used to hang out in the chat room. Now I'm busy talking to you guys, so I don't have quite as much time doing that. And also, if anyone needs or wants an audio feed, I usually supply an audio feed from my station of the TechNet. So if the Echo Link is down or whatever is down, and
repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Sorry about that. I'm getting wordy in my old age. Anyway, if you need an audio feed, you can just type in your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and it'll bring you to a little audio device, and it'll play the stream of the technical net. So, as always, I want to thank everyone who participated tonight. You guys made this as interesting as it was for me, and I want to thank each and every one of you guys. And now I want to pass it off to Paul, WS2N, for the space report.
AC2GS, WS2N. And very good. This is Paul for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. And Roy, I did read that article that was in the April newsletter from the club, and it's very well done. I especially like the idea of describing the size of the virus itself relative to the thickness of a human hair. Fascinating. Okay, let me see if I have it and how my audio is before I continue. Okay, it's okay. And there are some things going on. I mean, there's a lot of space-related topics that are coming to a grinding halt because of the virus, but there are some launches that are still going. Defense launches are still planned, and but, you know, quite a few scientific ones are starting to slow down. But a few are going up, including a manned launch on April 19th from Kazakhstan. Now, Kazakhstan is one of those pretty desolate places, and right now they're not showing hardly any virus there whatsoever. But that's where they launch from, on a Soyuz rocket. And you have one American and two Russians going to go up to the space station. Chris Cassidy, he's been up there before. And they're in quarantine. They go into quarantine anyway, you know, for a couple of weeks before launch, just in case, you know, somebody gets a cold or something happens. And the people that they come in contact with are also quarantined for those couple of weeks. They're taking extra precautions, and there are three other people on the space station. Of course, they don't have it. Basically, what it proves is that, you know, if you really are isolated, you will not get the virus. Also, if you're down in Antarctica, you won't have that problem either. They don't have any cases down there. That's the only continent where they don't have them. But nevertheless, Chris Cassidy and the two Russian crewmates will be flying on April 9th, and they're going to join up with three people that are still on board. And only for a short period of time, because the other three, Jessica Meir is one of the Americans, and two others will be coming back down, and that will leave just the three on board for an extended period of time. You know, depending on how we do in launching our two-person crew from Launch Complex 39A in Florida on a Falcon 9 rocket on a Dragon crew spacecraft scheduled for May, probably the tail end of May. If that doesn't go off as planned, these three people, these two Russians and then Chris Cassidy, will be the only crew for maybe 6 months or more on the space station. And then, you know, there are plans eventually for Boeing to send their Starliner up, which would eventually send three people up. But the Starliner is being reworked and problems being settled because of their failed mission couple months ago to the International Space Station. It was supposed to be an uncrewed mission on a crewed vehicle that was supposed to go up and go to orbit and then eventually reach a rendezvous with the space station and then be berthed with the Canadian robot arm. And that did not happen because they had some problems with the computers and the timing on board the spacecraft didn't match the rocket, and all kinds of problems found their way into that launch. 90% of everything worked good. It launched, and eventually they were able to bring it back, but it was unable to dock with go to the space station. It ran out of fuel because of the timing problems. The spacecraft was trying to orient itself. It thought it was at a different time, and it thought it was in the wrong location, and it used up a lot of fuel until Mission Control was eventually able to shut it down. So because of those delays, I mean, that was supposed to go up, you know, within a couple of months as well with the crew. it looks to me, I still haven't figured it out yet, but it looks to me like they are going to plan another uncrewed mission to make sure everything works before they put a crew on that thing. And that thing is called the Starliner. So it looks like SpaceX with the Falcon 9 and the Dragon crew vehicle will probably be the first one to make it to the space station. That will be the first time that we launch from American soil since the end of the space shuttle program, which was what, STS-130, 135, the Atlantis mission back in 2011. So hopefully it goes. They're able to get that up, and hopefully the SpaceX is able to work through all of the virus problems with the workload. I suspect that it might be a problem where there probably will be delays, but hopefully not. Just can't imagine, a million people lining the shores of Cocoa Beach, Florida, which they would normally do on an exciting launch. Since this has not happened since 2011, that's what you would normally expect. I don't think we're going to have these problems worked out in mid-May or even the tail end of May. Hopefully they do, but like after listening to Dr. Roy, it doesn't sound like that would be a possibility. I can't imagine, all these people lined up shoulder to shoulder on a beach waiting for a launch. But, what would happen is they'll say, oh, look, you can't do that. You know, human nature, you're going to get people that are going to go out there and do it anyway. So what do? Do you not send your crew up to help out the crew that's on board the space station? They're not going to be getting much done up on the space station with only three people. They estimate. Usually they have six people, and that gives them about 40, 45 hours of science per week. A lot of work on a space station is maintaining the space station. So we'll have to find out what happens. This is WS2N. Any comments or questions before I go on? Okay, like I said, there have been some rocket launches. Again, SpaceX did launch from Launch Complex 39A. Another batch of Starlink satellites, broadband satellites. Their goal is to put thousands of these things into space, and by adding the 60 that they launched last week, that gives them around 360 operating satellites in low Earth orbit. The success, they were delayed by a few days. They had one technical glitch. They got down to a zero, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and supposedly lift off. And computers on board Falcon 9 detected a problem with one of the engines, and it just shut everything down, and it didn't go anywhere. But last Wednesday, it did get off the ground, successfully launched. It was supposed to be the fifth time that they reuse the same booster. They keep reusing the boosters over and over again, and they're getting better at doing that. This would have been number five for this particular booster. They've successfully landed it on drone ships before and brought it back and sent it up over and over again. And they were supposed to do that this time as well. So they had their drone ship about 400 miles out to sea, out in the Atlantic Ocean. And as the booster was going up, one of the engines did fail as it was going up a little after 2 minutes of flight. And in doing so, most likely it was one of those engines that they need to reignite when they come back from 60 miles up. They separate from the from the second stage. The second stage goes on and puts the 60 satellites into orbit. The first stage does a 180, turns around and relights its engines, tries to slow itself down as it comes through the atmosphere, and then it's supposed to light another engine right at the end, right before it lands. It never got that far because one of the engines that had failed looked like that was one of the ones that are involved with deorbiting. So that booster was not saved. But the good news is they keep trying to reuse these fairings, the fairings around the satellites. And they're big, you know, these are like, you know, 5 meters in diameter and maybe 40 feet long. And the two halves open up like a clamshell type of deal and exposes the satellite. And, you know, it's been customary from the beginning of space age to let these things just burn up in the atmosphere or crash into the ocean. And Elon Musk will, you know, he's been trying to recover these things for years now. He's recovered five fairings, including the two that was just launched. It was the second time they were launched into space. And with that, they come down. They have their own attitude control thrusters, small nitrogen gas-powered thrusters, and it reorients itself as they're coming down. And eventually this parachute-type mechanism comes out, which guides it, you know, all the way down to the Atlantic and supposedly trying to land on a ship. And they have these ships, there's two of them down below, and they're big, I mean, these huge ships, and they have these massive nets about as big as a football field each, and he tries to catch them as they float down on this parasail type of parachute. And he's actually done it a couple of times. This time he didn't do it. He missed it. He came close to the boat. They landed in the water, but they were able to retrieve them. And most of the times, you know, or lately, he's been able to refurbish these things, even if they land in the water. The idea of the net is to stop them landing in the water and getting coated with salt water. A lot easy to refurbish the fairings if you catch it with the net. And just by doing this, he saves around $6 million a piece. He's been able to drive the price of launching the overall rocket way down. He's into the $60 million price for a launch compared to what NASA used to pay for other launches. They would think of paying $180 million a flight or even more. He's been able to do this, getting the price way down. So that's the story from that with these 360 satellites. Each one separates from one another. In this case, there were 60 that he launched. They have ion thrusters on board, and I've talked about that on that before, where they separate from one another using ion thrusters. And they have one solar sail that comes out that supplies the power for those thrusters. And, he's got them, in this case, around 53 degrees inclination. And by the time he's done, he plans on having thousands of these satellites up there to connect with the Earth for broadband internet service. And if his launch schedule holds true, he plans on launching one or two of these flights per month. He thinks they'll have enough satellites in space to start coverage probably in the United States at the end of the year. So that's the deal with that. Any questions or comments before I continue? This is WS2N. Okay, I guess not. And Now, China doesn't want to stop launching their rockets either, even in the middle of their virus epidemic. They felt that they had to go on with their one of their launches. It's called a Long March 7A, and it's a new type of rocket. They've done it before, but it failed, and they were trying to make this one successful, but it did not get the satellite to orbit. It was another failure, which could be problematic for the Chinese space program. They need this particular rocket. It's a liquid fuel engine, kerosene, liquid oxygen, and they're also using these exact same rocket for boosters on one of their bigger rockets, the Long March 5. And the idea of the Long March 5 is to use that to put their space station into orbit in the next couple of years. So with the failure of the Long March 7, that might be problematic, and they might not be able to stick to that schedule. And they also have manned missions planned in the future that want to utilize these rockets, and they're going to have to work on it to find out what the problem is. But that's the story with China. They have a very active space program. They plan on launching an orbital mission to Mars with a rover this summer. And they can straighten these problems out. We're going to have some competition with a rover on Mars and another orbiter. We have our orbiter that's going to be going up July 17th. I mean, our rover, now called Perseverance. They finally got a name for it. I think I mentioned that last week. Just like we have Curiosity riding around on Mars right now, it's going to have another one that kind of looks like the same type of design as Curiosity. This one's called Perseverance. A little bit bigger. And has more capabilities, more science capabilities, including a helicopter. It's going to bring a big helicopter with it. When I say big, the blades are 4 feet long. So naturally, it's going to be all electric, solar powered, and that should be interesting. And it also has the capability of making drilling cores out of the rocks. Use a big rock and actually make a core sample and then eventually store it for possible sample returns in 2024, 2026, depending on what NASA can come up with. And they're looking for help from the European Space Agency with that as well. So that might be a combined mission. You'll have Perseverance riding around on Mars, and then you'll eventually have a launch to almost the same location that landed that rover. And you'll be able to either have that same rover bring the samples back to the new lander, and or you might have another rover on the new go out and get the samples. We don't know. it's all in there, all on the drawing board. They don't have any finalized plans for a sample return mission, but they have the first part of it will be done with Perseverance. And hopefully that goes all, goes well. That'll be launched on an Atlas V rocket from Launch Complex 41 in Florida. And it should take about 6 to 8 months to get to Mars. I believe landing is in early February of 2021. And it'll have the same type of landing that Curiosity had. It'll have a cruise stage that brings it all the way to Mars. The cruise stage will separate. Perseverance will have its own back shell and heat shield. Back shell is on, shield on the bottom. And it'll come through the atmosphere. Eventually the heat shield will separate. And you'll have the parachutes, of course, slowing it down. And then toward the end, a couple of miles off the ground, you're going to have your back shell completely separate, and you're going to have this sky crane. Same setup that Curiosity had. Sky crane comes on with your deep pulsing rocket engines with the rover dangling below it. It's going to have cables. It's going to extend from the sky crane and then lower itself to the surface. Second, the wheels hit the surface. By the way, the wheels have to be all folded up first, so they'll unfold right before they hit the surface. And at that point, these pyrotechnic cutters will cut the cables, and the sky crane will fly away a couple of miles and leave the rover ready to go. Similar, or actually the same way that Curiosity did it. Except this thing's going to be more accurate. It's got better computers, better cameras on the way down. It's going to be taking pictures, and we'll be able to send information to the thrusters on the sky crane, you know, go left, go right, you know, much more accurate than what they did with Curiosity. So it'll land in a crater, Chesapeake crater, and hopefully all will go well. And thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people put their names into NASA last year, and they have a little chip, or everybody's name that they sent in will be on that chip, including mine. So hopefully my name makes it to Mars next February. This is WS2N. Any comments or questions for the next? Okay, we lost another astronaut last week. 88-year-old Warden Al Warden. He flew on Apollo 15 with David Scott and James Irwin. But he's been around a long time. He's been 88 years old, and he didn't die from the virus. You know, he had whatever he had. He just died in his sleep. But I remember Dick talking about that mission quite a bit. 15 and 16, he would listen to it on a parabolic dish set up at work. Al Warden was, he was the command pod, commander for the command capsule named Endeavor. Endeavor was the command capsule, and Falcon was the eagle that went down and landed Scott and Irwin. But he got to fly around the moon over and over again. And why they did a couple of EVAs down below. And that was the first of three missions with the rover. 15, 16, and 17 had a rover. So they did their EVAs. They got to ride around, but not Warden. He did make history though. He needed to retrieve these film canisters. They used to put the film canisters on the outside of the space vehicle. You know, they have the cameras there and the actual film canisters. It wasn't digital like what they have today. They needed to retrieve it. So on the way back from the moon, they just left the moon. He got to do an EVA. First traveling from the moon to Earth. So Earth, looked like a little little model, and he's out there doing a spacewalk to film it. So that was his real claim to fame. To say that he was the first one to do something like that is pretty interesting. I remember when they were doing it, so I thought it was pretty exciting. The idea that this guy's doing a spacewalk. I mean, weird enough when you're in orbit around the Earth. You feel like, well, you got some kind of control, you know, if there's something wrong or whatever, you hastily, you know, get back to Earth. This guy wouldn't stand a chance if something went wrong. They had needed to get him back. But he said he loved it, of course. This is WX2N. Any questions or comments for the space portion of the TechNet? I had to have one virus story about an astronaut, and it was Buzz Aldrin. He is self-quarantining himself, and he said he's going to sit on his rear end, lock the doors, and that's it. And he says he's real good at this, and he is, because he's an astronaut. What do? They quarantine themselves when they come back from the moon. And that's just what him and Buzz Aldrin and Collins did. They returned to the moon, and they never went anywhere. They just, they were in the size of a trailer for 2 weeks. And they landed on the Hornet carrier. They put them in there. Nixon was on the outside. Field away from him. He's looking through a window, and eventually the crew transferred the whole setup to land, and then they spent 2 weeks on, you know, locked up away, quarantined. And, you know, soon after that they stopped doing that. They did that for the next crew, but I think on 14 they didn't do that. They realized they weren't bringing any viruses back from the moon. So, little did they know that, you know, it's not the moon that they got to worry about, it's Earth itself. What kind of virus that, you know, could pop up here is a heck of a lot more dangerous than what they thought they might bring back from the moon. This is WS2N. Any comments or questions? Apparently a cancellation I call it a delay of the building of the Gateway space station. For the last couple of years, they felt that they needed the Gateway station to create a temporary home for astronauts coming and going to, you know, from the moon. And from the beginning, I knew this was going to be a problem, but they planned on having these people in this 7-day orbit around the moon. You go out like 40,000 miles out away from the moon, and you come back near the moon over and over again, and you would have this space station there, and you would bring a spaceship from Earth, dock with the space station, and eventually transfer over to a lunar landing vehicle located at the space station. And I would bring it down to the moon, and then you would come back up. Lunar landing vehicle is supposed to be reusable. And they wanted to do this all before now, originally 2028, but then they decided to push it forward to 2024. And the administration wanted to do that. And, you know, they're not getting enough money to do all this stuff. We talked about that on the net quite a bit, how that doesn't sound feasible or, technically it's possible, but finances are really not there. So they decided, well, we're going to do away with needing Gateway right now. We won't push the Gateway space station. I guess their plan now is to, duplicate Apollo, fly back to the moon, just to say that they did it. And, that's why I think is probably what they're thinking now. And, oh, yeah, we're going to do this by 2024. I still don't think they don't have the funds to do that. I'm still going with 2028. You need the SLS, the Space Launch System, to be built and completed. That thing is way behind in scheduling. And now with the coronavirus, they just stopped everybody working on SLS altogether. They won't even have a rocket to mind the spacecraft. I think you might have that ready, Orion, but it's space launch system doesn't look like it would be ready. You would need two or three missions before, I think it would be the third mission. One to go there unmanned and come back, another one to go there manned and come back without landing, and a third mission would be the one that they would land on the moon. So, well, I'm not going to hold my breath for that. Any comments or questions? This is WS Command. Okay. Just one quick topic. There's a company called OneWeb. OneWeb is another company that's mass producing these communication satellites, these broadband satellites, and they plan on launching around 600 to 700 satellites. Compared to SpaceX that wants to do, you know, thousands of satellites. This OneWeb, they're contracted with Arian Space to do the launch. And so sure enough, they had a Soyuz rocket launch 34 satellites up with them last week, successfully launched. I know they have money problems. According to what I was reading, they're going to still try to do it. OneWeb plans on doing a similar type of deal to what SpaceX is doing. The only difference is they're going to have more latency on their computers. It's going to be higher orbit. And since they're going to have higher orbit, you know, you're going to have, your radios that are receiving this on transmitting on Earth will, have they'll see them longer from horizon to horizon. You know, acquisition of signal and loss of signal will be a much longer time period than what SpaceX will have because of the higher altitude. But they are going to give up some latency time for that. So, had to mention OneWeb. any questions or comments for the net? Nothing heard. With that, I'll close down this portion of the SpaceNet report for the TechNet, and we'll be back next week. And hopefully, everybody stays safe. Stay 2 meters apart from one another, not 6 feet. We're hands. We talk in meters. I'm going to turn this over to Roy. Tomorrow night is club night, club net, and that comes on at 8:30 on these repeaters. Over to you, Roy, AC2GS. This is WS2N.
WS2N, KD2FRU. Thank you very much.
Welcome, George. Very good. And nice to hear from you, too. And back over to Roy.
This is AP2JA. That was excellent. Thank you.
Fine business. Very good. And, we're here every week, so thanks for the for that, and Roy, are you there? AC2GS.
I'm there, Paul. I'm just staying quiet, letting you get the accolades that you deserve.
Very good. Okay. And we wish Dick was here, but we'll fill in best we can. Hopefully, he'll be back someday in the future. Back to you, Roy.
Yes, indeed. We do miss him, and we hope that he'll be back real soon. I have nothing particularly against quitting the technical net, 5-10 minutes before the given hour of 11 o'clock. It sort of depends upon you guys. I'm not going to really think it's appropriate to start doing stories and such just at the time. So I'll leave it up to anyone out there. If they have any questions or comments, feel free to hit the push to talk button. We can roll that around for a few minutes.
WV2GXM, AC2GS. I got that in the wrong way, didn't I?
Rich, welcome aboard. How you doing, Rich?
Obviously not well enough to get the call signs in the right order, but hanging in there, and I appreciate the company. tonight. Yours and Paul's and everyone's, and yeah, just hanging in there. Thank you for being there. AC2GS, WB2GXO.
You're welcome, Rich. Thanks for listening, and thanks for throwing out your calls. I kind of depend upon participation for this thing. Without it, I really don't feel like a monologue. I thank you always for your participation in this experiment of amateur radio. And I just want to remind you that there is an exit for this tunnel. I can't tell you how far it goes and how deep it gets before we get to the end of it, but we'll get to the end of it, all of us together.
Well, I hope so. Thank you.
Okay, this is AC2GS. Anyone else with any closing statements before we shut her down for this week? Okay, very well. Again, I want to remind you guys that if you have any technical questions you would like to have addressed or topics you would like to have discussed, or if you have something that you want to pass on to Paul for the space report, an article that you read, a video that you saw, or if you have anything for me for the science talk, any topics you'd like me to cover, or any puzzles you've heard about that you think would suit my puzzle portion, the email address to reach me is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And links to articles will be available on the link page, roy.ac2gs.com. As always, I want to thank everyone who participated tonight and made this experience work. I don't know how things will work in the future. I'm still kind of adjusting things and trying to fit it all together and have it be as efficient and as useful for everyone as possible. So, as always, I ask everyone to have a happy and healthy week, to be as safe as they possibly can, not to despair, but not to deny. Be informed. Be smart about this, and we'll all get out the other end. And there's a bit of wisdom from one of the wisest men that I know, Dick, K2RIW, and that is, be kind to each other. So on that note, this is AC2GS, closing the technical net for this week. I'll see you back here next Sunday. I'm clear.
Yeah, Roy, you're still here. I don't know if you can say. How is Dick? I'm kind of surprised we haven't heard him in a while. WB2BXO here.
Yes, Frank. He's suffering from some GI problems that make it difficult for him to sit for long periods of time in front of a microphone, and so he decided to take a bit of a leave of absence from the mic, and you know, we hope in time he'll be able to come back to the microphone and join us again.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I've met him a number of times. He used to come out to the Radio Society of actually the Kings County Radio Club field days. I'm really going back in time to talk about the Radio Society of Greater Brooklyn. That goes back like 50 years. But anyway, the Kings County Radio Club field days and sit and chat with us all night long, almost like the tech met in person. Anyway, thanks a lot. I was a little worried. As usual, it was a pleasure to listen to you. And thanks for the rational COVID update also. Really helps to hear somebody who reads the literature and talks to people and knows what they're talking about. 73 Roy, WB2BXO.
Well, you're welcome, Frank. It's a sad point that I got my license and I joined King County Radio Club at a point where Mel was very ill and passed away soon after. I never got to meet Mel. I've heard him on the archived recordings of the Technical Met, and I recall stories of how, because Mel was a guy who was really doing a lot for Kings County Radio Club, when he had his field days, Dick would come by and visit and do what Dick normally has done for years and years and years, and chat about antennas by the fire side and such, and it's a shame that I missed all those opportunities. I never met Mel. I would have loved to have a conversation with him, but that's life.
Yeah, fascinating guy. Among other things, he had a Morse code key that he believes, I believe, that his grandfather used at Appomattox Courthouse. You know, and of course, he was in Vietnam and did communications. I mean, kind of a zealot kind of guy. Amazing. Mel, I'm talking about.
That's time.
Amazing
complete.
Guy. I'm sorry you didn't get a chance to meet him. Go ahead.
I mean, I got the archive, so I've heard him do amazing things on the Technical Met, things that I couldn't imagine trying to get away with. He did a session where he tried to explain to people how to calculate complex impedances in their heads. And he cited a book on electronic mathematics for electronics. And it sounded so interesting that I found it in a used bookstore and bought a copy of it myself.
Yeah, my dad tried to teach me math from that book many years ago, I think. Yeah, my dad is W2LOZ. He's not active, but still very much around. And I think when I was in seventh grade, he tried to teach me the math from that book. It was, you know, that is a classic.
Yeah, it's one of my prized possessions. I have way too many books. When I was a kid, I used to suggest getting books, and my father would suggest getting a library card, which I already had a library card. I kind of was one of those kids that just kind of ran through the reference material floor. But then, you know, when I got out on my own, I buy books. And one of my books is that book, and it's a very nice book. It explains the concepts relatively simply, which is problematic. There are some antenna books that will give me a nosebleed trying to read, because especially the college-level physics antenna books are based on matrix math, which, again, would give me a nosebleed.
There, I'm coming in through Echolink from Northeast Philadelphia. In any case, yeah, if the books give you a nosebleed, I can imagine how you can imagine how the rest of us feel. So, I'm told that the extra class exam now is extremely difficult, probably more difficult than what I took 25 years ago. So I guess maybe it really helps to be able to do some of the math now.
Well, one of the things that I decided to do when I was studying for the exam, HandyHam, is a organization for sight impaired, and so they had audio tapes that suggested ways of doing it in your head, which appealed to me for some strange reason. So that's when I first learned how to kind of do complex impedances in your head. It's basically just Pythagorean theory. So it's not that bad. But it was useful. I can't tell you definitively. I am a volunteer examiner, so I give people the exams, all of them. and I took the exam about 9 years ago. At 9 years ago, wasn't really that difficult. The ones that required math, they usually picked the constant values that were so easy that you could do it without a calculator. I brought my calculator to the test, and I never ended up turning it on. So, I don't know. It depends upon your motivation. If you're really heavy-duty motivated and you don't have any kind of phobia against exams, they're still all open book exams for the most part because the pool questions are publicly available along with the answers. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm just taking it lightly, but I think it's much easier, especially I remember the good old days listening to Gene Shepard on the radio, and he was a ham back in the 40s, and he would tell people about how he went for his exam, and they gave him a piece of paper, and he had to draw a Colpitts oscillator complete with component values. That's a different world entirely.
Yeah, my dad had to take that exam. My dad took his exams in 1938, he took the extra in 1968. Must have been 1973 or 74, I think, 73 or 74 when I passed the advanced, because he said he wanted to be at a higher grade than I was. And he said then, I think, still may hold. I know he did hold just about every FCC radio license that was issued, including the radar endorsements at one time. And he said he found the extra exam fairly challenging at the time. That was before all the exam questions were published. What I did when I took it in 1996, I think, what I did was I pretty much did the memorization bit for everything but the math questions. And I looked at some of the math questions and I said, oh, forget it. I'm just not going to figure this out. But I just made sure I would get everything else right. And that got me by, I think the VE said by like one question. But anyway, the important thing was that I got it. Frankly, I think the sub-band should be eliminated. I just don't think enough hands really care about the HF subbands anymore, but apparently I'm still in the minority, and the ARRL is making good money from the books, so I don't think there really is much motivation on the part of the league to petition for that. Go ahead.
Yeah, giving something back, it doesn't sound like a winning situation. You want even more things, even if you don't need them, just in case someday you need them. So I can understand it. It's politics at the ARRL, and that's the game that they play. It sort of depends. I mean, we had actually a volunteer exam about 4 months ago. We had two very clever guys actually do what I tend to. My only metaphor for sports is the hat trick. Basically, they walked in with no license and they walked out with extras. They were electrical engineers. One was a retired broadcast engineer, so it's not like this was new stuff for them. But it was nice to see that happen. I know people who kind of take offense to that. They want you to earn that extra. You should work your way up the ranks for years, but I don't really believe in that. So, yeah. It depends. Different eras had different requirements. I kind of think that they don't really want the people to fail anymore. So that's why it's an open pool question and such. So, the only people I've seen who have significant problems are the guys who show up with stories that they started studying the night before with a pack of six-pack of beer. Those are the guys who usually fail.
GXM.
Yes, Rich.
Now, I got my extra 4 years ago. After being advanced class for about 40 years, I decided, I might as well go for the top tier. So I purchased Gordon West's book, And the thing about Gordon West's book is that, I sat with it almost every day for 6 months. And some of it's memorization, but more than that,